Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of From the Field. I'm Will Haverkamp.
I'm Joe Jurisic.
And today we're excited to introduce you to our new friend, Chris Kaiser. He is the president and CEO of the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute, OPEI Canada, as well as the Equip Expo. So OPEI represents the interests of manufacturers and suppliers of power equipment, small engine, battery power systems, UTV, golf car, and personal transport vehicle. And they also help with the developing and maintaining industry standards, both in the U.S. and internationally. So I'm sure I probably missed something, but, Chris, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to jump right in. Could you tell us a bit about your personal history with OPEI, along with a little about your current role and responsibilities with the organization?
Sure. I joined OPEI 16 years ago, so I've been with them a good long time. I went out to Washington working for a member of Congress. I did a decade in the Congress. I ran a joint committee of Congress on the Senate side. Then I, turned to the dark side. I went to lobbying, if you will. I worked for Forest Products Manufacturers, and I was at the Automobile Group for a number of years before I came to OPEI. So been in politics for a long, long time. I'm a lawyer by training, and I'm connecting, the show's in Louisville, Kentucky, and I went to law school in Louisville. So the congressman I worked for was Southern Indiana. So now that I'm back in Louisville, it's kind of like coming home.
Very nice.
That's great. That's great. And so for those that don't know, OPEI, tell us a bit about the company and just how you've become the leading voice for the outdoor power equipment industry today.
Sure. We're a trade association, so we represent manufacturers of outdoor power equipment and their suppliers. Before Congress, before state agencies and international groups. So we're their voice, one of hundreds in Washington metropolitan, D.C. So we own a building in Alexandria, Virginia. We have a staff there. We also have the show staff in Louisville. But we represent their interests before EPA and the Consumer Product Safety Commission and the California Air Resources Board and the Congress. So we work with legislation and regulation. And you mentioned in the intro, we're an SDO, a standard development organization. So we work on crafting voluntary manufacturer safety standards for a wide range of products. I think we've got about 35 safety standards to our name. Now that's a regular process. That's an international process. We work very closely with ISO and IEC. On safety standards globally. And so we're the forum for that. It's what association means, forum. It's by which our manufacturers, we've got about 120 that belong to OPEI. We're about 70 years old, to represent their interests collectively.
Well, wow. That's incredible. That's a large group to represent.
And they're competitors. So getting them all to agree on something is a bit of a balance beam. And getting them to stay on position. But that's our goal, is to find where there's commonality and collective interest, help them find that interest, and then represent it before EPA or California, wherever the need arises.
Yeah.
That's great. It's certain that obviously you've maintain a number of relationships in a very political fashion, very fitting for you, Chris, by the way. What would be some of the reasons, main reasons that power equipment brand or manufacturer would get involved with OPEI?
Well, if you want to be involved in creating and crafting the standard for the product you manufacture, right, that's key. If you want to be part of the decision-making process in addressing challenges, so whether it's the emission situation in California, whether it's debris penetration to the Consumer Product Safety Commission or the generator shutoffs, portable generators, we represent them as well. So whatever the issues of the day are, and nowadays on batteries, like in Canada, it's on recovery and recycling and taxes and benefits. If you want to be part of that process to develop a lobbying strategy or a position, we're involved in a number of lawsuits. So we'll sue EPA or that sort of thing on a particular issue. If you want to have a voice, then you need to become part of the association. A lot of federal agencies in particular don't necessarily want to deal with a manufacturer. They'd rather deal with a collective voice of the business. Sure. So the Consumer Product Safety Commission prefers, in many cases, unless they're dealing with a particular company's challenge or recall, is to work with the industry collectively. And then they'll work with us. And we'll also partner with the National Association of Manufacturers, or the Chamber of Commerce in Washington, D.C., when they're bringing manufacturers together to work collectively on a piece of legislation, where your voices together are stronger than they would be independently.
Absolutely.
It also allows us, if we're working in a state, right to repair piece of legislation, and we're in Minnesota, we can turn to Toro to help us there, or Polaris, et cetera. So in Wisconsin, you can turn to Briggs & Stratton and Aaron's and Skag and all the folks we have there. So that's the unique thing about the association, is you can collectively put those respective political interests together, and then you can reach additional legislators or regulators. So we have, you can reach, you know, North Carolina business, South Carolina business, Georgia business. You can reach out to those political voices. So the association is a strong model. And a lot of associations have been around for a long, long time. Again, we're 70 years young. So it's a working model, and OPI is strong. Our membership doesn't, we have very little change in the membership. And almost in every product category we represent, we have more than 90% of the global market in that, in our representation. Most categories, it's 95%. So we, from association standpoint, it's very, very strong.
Yeah, you
sounds like a very powerful voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeff.
But no, and that's great too, because I mean, there, I would say in the changing world that we live in, there it seems like there's always regulations coming out. I mean, I don't know much on it. I heard it in passing from a couple of my buddies who own landscape companies about the leaf blowers and the dust levels. And I think, like you said, it's better to work together on something that, you know, you can bring to the market collectively and not have to always look behind your back on and have a voice that's saying, hey, this is what we're trying to do, versus like, yeah, one person just standing out alone. I mean, it's hard to tackle our government today as it is, one person alone. So, you know, it's great that, you know, you can get all of these competitors to work together and push towards, you know, a goal that's good for everyone.
And, you know, it's a global, you know, the world went and got flat on us, right? It's a global marketplace. Our folks manufacture all over the place. We source parts all over the place. We assemble all over the place. And what happens is it's very hard to make a product for Rhode Island or a product for California or a product for Texas or deal with a particular band. Just the nature of how the products are manufactured, how they're sold, how they're distributed, retailed, et cetera. It's extraordinarily challenging. So, yes, we want to work together to, you know, a particular municipality wanting to ban a product is very challenging. A particular municipality, California, for instance, wanting to transition to a battery-only workforce is very challenging. And so, yeah, getting them together to work on those things is frankly the best way to do it.
Yeah.
So how much of that is your, there's obviously a number of things that you guys are involved in. How much, you know, time is spent, you know, lobbying and you know, taking care of those folks within your network?
Well, a lot. Now we have it's a governance structure. We have a committee structure. So whether it's a ground supported, handheld, a market statistics thing, a legal and regulatory compliance thing, a battery thing, we all have relevant committees at OPEI, which deal with those issues in particular. And so they'll sort it out. They'll find a position relative to that. So they draw from expertise in the companies that sit on those committees. We have a significant staff that staffs those committees. There's a committee liaison who's an employee of OPEI to help them find that. And then we'll position or work with other associations to work on a problem in Minnesota or a problem in Europe. We're an international trade association. Again, we work with ISO and IEC and our COBA, our EGMF, European Garden Machinery Federation. They're sort of our sister organization in Europe. If you look at our members, we're a global association. We have folks in China, Japan, Europe, Eastern, Western Europe, South America, et cetera. And that's reflected both in our trade show and in our membership. You know, globally, with consolidation, there are fewer and fewer manufacturers. You know, there's probably 25, 30 global manufacturers that manufacture this stuff under different brand names globally. And most of them are in our membership.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Go ahead, Will.
It's a testament to being 70 years young,
yeah,
right? Yes. Yeah, for sure. So one of the main things that, you know, I'll say this too, we were an exhibitor at Equip, and that's going to be our next topic of conversation, getting, you know, to one of the main things that you guys focus on. I was actually blown away this past time, just the amount of manufacturers and just, you know, folks and products that were represented from all over the world. It was very cool to see. So, you know, kudos to you guys. The show is very well done. There's so much to do there. And you know, you guys had a banner year this past year, I understand, right, as far as attendance, right?
We did. Yeah. We set records in every, now this was, remember last year was our first year of ownership and management. We brought the management of the show in-house for its first time in 40 years. And we have 100% ownership of the show now. So we did make some changes. And as a result, our largest year ever in sponsorships, our largest year ever in ad sales for our magazine, the largest attendance ever in all of our categories. And we sold out. For the first time in our history, we sold every inch indoors and out. That's 1 million square feet. And we had a wait list. And so all good. And we're going to do some, we're going to expand, I think, for this year to meet demand. So far, the show is looking very strong.
Awesome. Well, congratulations to you guys. So, you know, hats off for a show very well done.
Thanks.
So
it's a big team. There's a lot of people involved.
No doubt. Like I said, my next topic was, you know, obviously OPEI powers the Equip Expo in Louisville every year. It was formerly known as GIE, and you just explained that as far as you guys now taking that in-house. I'm sure that's an incredible undertaking, but to have a banner year, your first year out of the gate, that has to feel great.
It does. But the show's evolving, right? It grows. It's not static. It's not stale. So in 2007, we partnered with NALP, and we grew together. It was a good, strong decade, and we evolved. And so they wanted to rotate, create an education conference. Some of the things, they wanted to do some things we couldn't do here. And so we did take 100% ownership of the show and retooled it. And so, as you know, we rebranded it, we refreshed it, we did some survey work. We wanted to figure out what our attendees really, really wanted to make it peer-to-peer professional. And we wanted people who came to our show to take something home, right? That they learn something that's good for their business, whether it's finding equipment or finding software or finding friends or it's also experiential. You know, it's a week-long event now. That's the one thing folks are like, we do hear often people come for the first time and they're like, oh my goodness, right? I should have had better shoes.
Oh, no doubt.
There's a lot going on. And we tell people, don't come for a day. I mean, you need more time than that. Unless you come year over year over year and you've got a plan, right?
Yeah.
But it's a big show. It's a physical show, right? We're 1 million square feet, 30 acres outside. You need a jacket, you need comfortable shoes. And one of the great things about our shows, you guys well know, it's not just come look at shiny, pretty things in a showroom. We let you go outside. We let you, you know, get on it, rip, tear, dig, cut, you name it, trench. It's a real world experience and we want it experiential. And so every year we do a survey, every year we listen to our attendees and what is it you want during this week? So we do some entertainment stuff. We want you to have some fun at the same time. But that's when people talk and learn, whether it's at a reception or a concert, et cetera. They'll get talking about business, and that's when they learn. And so we want to create those experiences.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, you're a mind reader. I was going to ask, if I've never been to a clip, what am I looking to get? You just hit the nail on the head. So fantastic.
It's forum. You have to create an opportunity where people will physically come together and mingle and introduce themselves to one another. Yeah. We've got some exciting things we're doing differently for our 40th anniversary. That's the other thing. You got to keep the show fresh, which is tough. It's an annual show and it's a big show. So keeping it fresh, keeping it topical. Again, we try to listen and we have partners. Again, we don't do the education. We partner with like landscape management, or we'll partner with the tree training folks, or we'll partner with the irrigation association or pool and spa association, for them to do specialized training in their field, but for our attendees. We want it valuable for the landscape contractor or the hardscape contractor or the pool and spa contractor that they can learn something at this show.
That's great.
Go ahead, Will. I broke up a little bit.
No, you're fine. Go ahead, Joe. I'll let you ask your question.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's so... And you bring up a good point. I mean, this industry, I think it just goes to the industry that we all are in. It's the green industry. It's something where it is very, it's experiential. It's tactile. It's not abstract, right? And you get the most
right.
going Yes, I have gone out on the equipment and dug a couple holes and played around, but you get to learn and you get to see how different manufacturers are working and trying to solve problems that, do pop up in the contractors day to day. And then I think the other thing too with that is the openness. Like you said, people talk. You don't feel alone when you start to hear, I'm going through this problem. And the guy next to you who, was, at the concert or whatever overhears and goes, yeah, I'm dealing with the same thing. This is what I did. Or, hey, exactly. That I mean, it's just bringing people together as a collective to help improve the industry overall. I mean, you guys do a fantastic job of providing that setting. It's a very comfortable, very easygoing setting. It's not overly too formal. I mean, it's just down to the nitty gritty, and that's great. And I think that's why a lot of people enjoy the show. They get to be real, go see what's out there, and like you said, look at something that's going to improve their day to day.
If you sit on one of the young, I've turned into an old person. I'm literally a living fossil. And so if, the Energize or the influencer events is just get them together and get out of their way. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And they'll do it. And so I sit in on Energize last time and, they're shouting about this problem they have. And I make this much money and I get this tax problem or I get this organization problem. Lots and lots of labor issues, and it's one of the reasons we've structured the show the way we have is to help landscapers keep their people year round. But they're not shy about it, right? And that's how they learn. Is this, well, yep. This was my solution, and this is what I do to keep my folks, or this is how I treat this particular thing for a tax consequence. I've told our folks here is get them together and get out of their way, and let them sort it out. And thus far, it's been a pretty successful formula.
I think a lot of people have done baptism by fire, and they're willing to share that experience. That's a resounding statement of our industry.
And, coming back from COVID was tough. We still have some issues with, our Chinese exhibitors mm-hmm. and attendees. Mm-hmm. COVID is still challenging there. We lost the show in 20, as you know. Yep. And so, we're still in a building back phase. And so the labor market and keeping your folks engaged and employed year round has become extraordinarily challenging, not just for the landscaper hardscaper, but for OPEI and for the Equip Expo staff and for other staffs. And if you're putting on a show of this size, so we're now in the top three in Louisville, Kentucky. So we're in Louisville every year.
Why Louisville? I don't mean to cut you off, Chris, but why Louisville? Just curious.
Sure. Well, it started here, right? And we grew organically. So 40 years ago, the city of Louisville and our organization got together and created the show. And put it here. Now, if I had to come up with a reason, it's the outdoor demonstration area. It is literally the only facility of its kind that has that much green space at the back door that they'll let you tear up. So we have to, we tear that stuff up, as you well know. And then we put it back together and it all gets rebuilt every single year. But it is the only facility of its kind. And there's probably only 4, 5, 6 facilities that can handle our footprint. Again, we're a very large show, centrally located. A lot of folks can get to us. The business is largely east of the Mississippi, but we're global. We had folks come from Australia, Guam, New Zealand, 49 countries. It's a global show, but it grew organically. It's a good size, although we are pushing Louisville on hotel rooms. So we set a record again in hotel rooms, north of 32,000 for the week, room nights. That's and incredible. So that puts us in the top three of revenue generators for the city of Louisville and includes the Derby. So we're a very big show and, we're essentially a week long. So most attendees we get for 3 or 4 nights. But we're starting to push them now in hotels. So we sell them out. And luckily they are building some new properties. But Louisville, honest to God, it grew organically. The city is very, very good to us. Rotating a show can be helpful in getting new particular audiences, but there is something to be said for comforture. People who come here regularly, they know the city, they know how to get here, get around. It's big enough yet small enough. It's like a shoe that fits. Thus far it fits. And as you know, our show had been managed by a third party outside vendor since its inception for 39 years. Those mm-hmm. folks essentially retired. We bought them out. We brought the management of the show in-house. We opened an office in Louisville, Kentucky. So we've got a dozen people here. The show is a year-round enterprise. You don't put on something that big and a month. It's a 12-month enterprise. And so we have a staff now. They're OPEI employees here in Louisville. So we now have 2 offices.
Wow. That's, yeah, I guess there's...
It's a machine.
Yeah.
Right.
I'd love to see a rolling calendar of just, you said, for 12 months of putting on that big of a show. That would be something to see. But I think that's a very probably a guarded secret in Louisville, along with Angel Envy's, you know, recipe there. So
exactly. And we, again, Louisville is a fantastic partner. The city of Louisville, they're very, you know, we have a very significant relationship with them. Actually, the former CEO of Louisville Tourism, the old CVB, retired after 30 plus years. Karen Williams, she was retired for about a day. And they'd worked so closely with us, and we'd gotten to know them so well. She's now on our staff. So she's our chief development person for the association and the show. So we have a fantastic crew here. We have three folks on the staff here that have been with the show more than 20 years. Know it well. They've watched it grow.
Wow. Yeah. So you guys are intertwined with the city of Louisville is what it sounds like to me. That I'm sure they do not want to see this expo go anywhere.
No, they're very good partners. And because now with OPEI, we're now beginning, and it's an association. OPEI has dozens of meetings a year, right? And so it's always, we have a very nice building in Alexandria that we own. But we're starting to bring people here. And so we'll have an ISO meeting or a standards meeting or market statistics meeting here. And you know, you're just changing it up some. It's a fairly, and remember, Louisville's a, you know, it's not cheap, but it's a responsible environment. It's not overly expensive. Yep. Folks can afford it. Hotel rooms here, food here. Look, it's more expensive in Atlanta, Chicago, Orlando. And so the cost of doing business here, our attendees are working folks. They're folks that have businesses. They have payrolls. They've got, you know, a lot of them are privately held. So they're working hard, and so we need to make sure that the money spent go a long way. And it's not a entertainment mecca. You know, this is not Vegas. This is not people come here to work. This is a business show. And Louisville, again, it fits like a shoe.
That's great.
Do you real quick? I'll keep it quick. Will, do you have an equivalence for, since you are global? Do you have an equivalence for Europe? That is, you know, what equip is here.
You know, they don't. And so we've got a couple of very large, you know, there've been a lot of consolidations in the business of late. Some manufacturers have bought up a bunch of brands, that are global, very much global. And they were here sort of for the first time in their new corporate structure. And, one of them in particular is from the UK and said, God, this is a global show. The shows in Europe, they may be bigger, but they almost always involve construction or farm machinery. You know, it may be a bigger show. There's a big one in China, but it's we're the only show of our kind that is just us, just our business. You know, we don't have a lot of construction stuff. We don't have any ag stuff. We have light construction that a landscaper might use, right? But ours is the only show of its kind. And one of the things we are working on, and we have two big companies, international companies, we're moving in that to that space, is to make it a global show, to see the products. Again, there's been a lot of consolidation in the business. And so you can see, it's the one place where you can see all the products that these manufacturers make in one spot and in a time way that's meaningful to you. I mean, you could spend some time here and spend some time with the companies bring. The nice thing is I have a board of directors meeting here during that. The CEOs are here. Right. So it's the nice thing about our industry. They bring, it's the CEOs, it's sales, it's engineering, it's manufacturing. There's going to be somebody in that booth that can answer your question, whether it's how the thing's made, how, you know, what's the life cycle, how do you recycle it, recover it, whatever. There's just, it's the place the industry brings everybody here.
That's great.
That's great. Yeah. That's incredible. I mean, that just speaks a testament to what y'all put together, you know, and obviously plenty of time and effort. You know, us being Landscape Hub, you know, we're an online marketplace where we connect, you know, landscape contractors with the wholesale marketplace for green goods predominantly and other things as well. So we're always interested in how technology is moving our industry forward. You know, how is that influencing the face of the Equip Show itself? You know, you could do the gas versus electric. You had some drone zones, which were really cool, gives people a chance to actually test out the equipment inside and a lot of other things too. So what else is coming new for 2023 in regards to technology at the show?
Well, the evolution of, you know, technologies introduced. So robotics, remote controlled, interconnected product, advances in software, the latest in battery product and different kinds of batteries. So you're not, it's not just necessarily lithium or solid state or what have you. You know, the battery market is now growing significantly. And so you're seeing some technological evolution there and developments. Again, we allow you to experience the product, test the product. The nice thing about batteries, you can do it indoors as well as outdoors. So I think we're going to expand the battery space, the indoor demonstration spaces. We'll use the West Wing. But it's, you know, it's where manufacturers debut product. We have lots of them. We're going to reintroduce the new product showcase. We're going to have a history museum there this year for their 40th. But lots and lots and lots of new product is brought to the show and debuted there or immediately after to have it there. That's why so many dealers come here, et cetera, is to see, you know, a lot of times the competing products in that space.
Sure.
Lots of robotics, lots of interconnected stuff, a lot of sort of remote control stuff, and software. So all the technology behind the equipment is evolving equally as fast. We have a lot of software folks at the show that can demo it. So as a from a technology standpoint, it's where you're going to go. That's why we have, I don't know if you saw it last year, we have some TV shows that our foundation sponsors, but Mission Unstoppable, which is sort of for women in the space, girls coming into the space. It's STEM education, technology education. You know, we shot a TV show at Expo. Cool. Latest technology that some of the companies were bringing into the space and women evolving in our space. So, again, this is the place folks are going to see that experience, see that and to experience it.
That's awesome to hear. As if you don't have enough.
I know, right?
Do, yeah. Well, and as if people can't experience enough at the show, too. You guys, you pack in, you know, plenty of extras as well. So, you know, you guys have, like you already mentioned, your expanding demo area. You know, I love seeing that. It's amazing to get down and get dirty with the machines and, you know, it's basically test before you buy kind of thing. I think everybody appreciates that. You know, and then you have Hardscape North America, which is involved. You have ATV demos. You said, had mentioned also just being able to, or climbing trees. That was another part of it. You have Mutt Madness. And then also then there's the nightlife, piece to it as well at the 4th Street Live. You know, we've been down there and partake, and joined in on the fun. You had Trace Adkins last year. I mean, what else can you do to take it above and beyond that, you know?
Well, for instance, this year for our 40th, if you've been in the Yum Center, that's a big arena downtown. It's an indoor concert venue. And we're going to take the Yum Center. It's a big, big facility, fairly new down on the river. And we're going to have Third Eye Blind. So we keep stepping it up, right? Whether it's the keynote speaker or our band offerings or concert offerings. We're going to, probably last year we had our opening reception at Slugger Field. This year we're moving into the new KIC. It's called the Kentucky International Exposition Center. It's downtown. It's adjacent to the Marriott and the Hyatt. And it's a beautiful facility. Just renovated and sort of built. They added on to it. And what we want to do now with our opening reception, which was new last year, our opening night party, again, if you can get here, we'll probably keep you fed. You know, we'll keep you entertained. Mm-hmm. There's very little expense to that, to the attendee. And so we want to showcase some Louisville facilities and some of the things in Louisville. I think, you know, we'll go out to Churchill Downs maybe next year. But the KIC is an evolution of that. So that opening reception is likely going to get moved around to Louisville places as we, again, expose the city to our attendees. We're going to move the Crashers, sort of almost our house band now. They play every year for us. They're very, very popular, Mark and the Crashers. That we're going to put them at the opening. You did mention the tree, how the tree came about. It's funny, a lot of landscapers, we're doing some modest tree care as part of their landscaping services. And they, again, it was one way they could keep people year round. If they got into the tree business, you know, they can do that year round oftentimes. And so they talked to us about that. And there was a very large tree services company CEO that was sitting at Mutt Madness. That's another story. And he says, you know, we really ought to, we need to be here. A lot of these folks we work with. And I said, come, what do you need? He said, well, we need a tree. how big a tree? And he's like, you know, a real tree, 60, 70 feet tree. I said, well, if you'll cut it down, I'll get it in here. So if you cut that tree down, you find me a tree, you cut it down, I'll put it on a flatbed, and because you can drive onto Freedom Hall. I said, and I'll work with our services provider, and we'll put it up. I have the world's largest tree stand. It's 26,000 pounds that Fern built us. And we put that tree up in Freedom Hall. And it's now, it's part of the equation. We did a Mission Unstoppable episode with the tree ladies. We shot it up in Wisconsin. And that's now part of, you know, who we are. And so we, you know, we have the tree every year. We cut it down every year. And it's a big process for us. We drive it into Freedom Hall. And we're going to create some space in there. So somebody said we need a swimming pool. A lot of landscape contractors are starting to do. I've gotten to know one here who did a Lucky Dog episode with us. I've got a thing for dogs and dog rescue.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that, Chris. Don't worry.
He's you know, he's gotten into the pool business. And he's like, he's a huge landscape business. And now he started to put some pools in. And he says, y'all need a pool. To do some, you know, we had last year pool and spa, did some training and education for landscapers nosing into that space. Or they'll landscape around a pool. You know, they do a lot of landscapings and that sort of thing. I think we're going to put a pool in Freedom Hall. What the heck?
Right.
I mean, why not?
Create some space. So again, we listen. And if it's something we can do, the nice thing about that particular facility, again, why we're in Louisville. You got Freedom Hall to work with. You know, Hardscape has Hardscape outside. We're probably going to go into Broadbent Arena. The West Wing is like a giant barn, right? And it's 175,000 yep. square feet. It lends itself to some of the things we're going to do in there that will surprise you this year. Again, we're going to expand. So we want to keep it fresh. Quick one on the dogs. So we sold out and we had to move the food a few years back. Or it got very, very snug and we had to move some food. And at the time, the show management was like, well, we got to put the food in Freedom Hall. We'll never get people into Freedom Hall. Never, never, never. And it's too far. And I said, we'll add dogs and they'll come. And so that's when we created the dog adoption bit, Madness. Put it in Freedom Hall at lunchtime, 11 to 2, and the crowds were massive. Because that let me play, you know, again, our foundation is told from a dog's point of view. We have a dog celebrity, Mutt Mulligan. She's laying over. She's getting antsy. She didn't like the door closed. and it all, you know, again, my board is a fantastic board. Look, they have, all this stuff I'm talking about, they approve. But it fits nicely. You know, we've sponsored several seasons of Lucky Dog. We're big into dog rescue and rehabilitation. And again, our education, and we've reached 70 million kids with Turf Mutt. Teachers and families. Wow. It's told from a dog's point of view. Our dog is a superhero.
That's cool. That was actually my next segue was into, you know, it was something that even just speaking with your colleague, Debbie, she mentioned to me that, you know, we couldn't talk to you unless we wanted to make a mention of the Turf Mutt Foundation. And so I wanted to get to that, but you beat me to it, Chris. Just tell us a little bit why that's so near and dear to you, if you don't mind.
And I'm going to show you this. You know, again, Turf Mutt is a real dog, right? So come here. So I don't know if you can see her. Can you see her?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's Mulligan. She comes to work every day. She's a working dog. So back in 2007, EPA said there, you know, drought, you know, landscapes use water. And the water office at EPA said, oh, we got to save water. We'll get rid of landscapes. And that's the truth. They said, well, let's limit landscapes and turf grass and stuff to 40% of the landscapable area of any given lot. And again, from an association standpoint for our industry, it's like, whoa. Kind of crazy. Well-intentioned, you want to save water, that's great. But by the way, you're going to destroy habitat, this, that, and the other. And so we wanted to educate folks about photosynthesis and how important the landscapes are. And now it's evolved into backyarding. The solution is not to rip out or tear out landscapes. It's to put the appropriate landscapes in the appropriate place. Plant, right place. Yep. And so we created a program in late 7 about how to, because you can't, you know, I'm a lobbyist. Adults aren't listening to us. And so we want to educate kids. Educate kids about the outdoors. And you create backpack programming. They take it then home. It's like recycling. Recycling got started with kids. They took it home to their parents for having that. When I was at the paper industry, because manufacturers wanted that, you know, pulp back. those raw materials. So that's what we started with kids, having them understand recycling and that kind of thing. The same, I brought it to Turf Mutt, is we got to teach kids, but you got to make it sticky, right? Yeah. And so if you tell from a dog's point of view, and so we created a superhero to deal with bad guys. Heat Freak, it's the heat island effect, evotranspiration, carbon creep, that's climate change. You know, our yards are the largest carbon sink in the country, and they produce oxygen. If you tear them all out, well, you know, at the rate we're knocking down the rainforest, you're going to run out of oxygen. So you got to produce oxygen, you got to sequester carbon. Doctor, the evil Doctor Runoff. You lean landscapes to capture moving water, rain. You got to hold it on site long enough for trees and larger plants to drink, and you got to clean it up and filter it. That's what plants do. Heat Freak, dust demon, dust, and particulate matter. Those are the core bad guys. Those are the core principles of the value of a living landscape. And because Turf Mutt was a cartoon dog, got cartoonized, to fight the bad guys, and we created a curriculum in that space. Started with a couple hundred schools. We've literally reached 70 million kids. Huge. Took off. We were the Weekly Reader, Discovery, Scholastic. We're in the United, one of the founding members of the United States Green Building Council Global Learning Lab. So we're in the learning lab globally. Our little old Turf Mutt program. And then we got into sponsoring some television work that would, you know, they'd adopt a dog and we'd help them find a landscape for their particular region that suited their needs. It's not to tear out the landscape. It's to get an appropriate landscape. It evolved then with COVID. Again, during COVID, with Scholastic, we were the largest, the most used stay-at-home curriculum, the number one download for parents who suddenly found themselves educators during the COVID year was Turf Mutt. So it grew organically. My board just said, if you'll stop talking, we'll give you some money. And we created Turf Mutt. and it's just taken off. And we lost the original Turf Mutt. He was 14. And so Mutt Mulligan, who was adopted at 3 years ago at Mutt Madness. We put her to work on her first day. We took her out on the floor, shot some pictures. And as you know, Lucky Dog and Mission Supple, that's all evolved to where they're now at our show. And they'll be filming again this year. But the Turf Mutt Foundation is to help us empower homeowners to make the right choices, to connect kids to their natural landscapes as stewards. And again, it's just adding flowering plants, pollinator support, knowing your zone, putting the right plants, right places, creating habitat. Again, if we value our outdoors and value the landscape, it's good for business.
Well, it's also, I think, the common good. Everyone today can easily get gobbled up in technology, head down at their phone kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Is bringing it back to life, how they can interact with it, especially at home. Like you said, a lot of parents became educators. All right, we're going to go out into the yard, and this is why we're doing this. And then that, maybe strikes to resonate with the parents, like, oh, man, we do have a lot of runoff here. Look at the erosion. So, I mean, it's you're two birds with one stone on multiple fronts, and that's huge. And you're doing it mainly just because you're good stewards. It's not a business ploy. So, I mean, of course, at the end of the day, everyone's got a mortgage to pay, but
that's exactly right. And during COVID, so we hear all the time is, how can I get my kids off the sofa, get them off their devices, get them outside, get them connected? And one of the best ways to do that is get a dog. If you get a kid a dog, they're going to end up outside and you're going to end up in a yard and get them some exercise. So for us, it dovetails nicely. We're at that age group where if your parents, it's a mouse click, you know your zone, right? Plant flowering plants that, plant that flower at the right time. And that's a great thing for a kid to understand is, where do you live? So when I lived in Alexandria, it's the Atlantic Flyway, lots of migratory birds. So if you put these kinds of flowers or plants in, they will stop, rest, and recharge, and actually may just stay for the season. And it's amazing. And we shot, every major network has been at my house to watch Turf Mutt, NBC, ABC, CBS, because we showcase that. And so depending on the time of year, we have a lot of different flowering plants, and I'm doing it right now in Louisville, Kentucky. So whether it's hummingbirds or towhees or what have you, butterflies, bees, you can support them. And that's what we want to empower kids to do. Help their, just don't go to Home Depot and buy what's on sale. Buy what's appropriate. Yeah. Learn at your garden center. I'm not anti-Home Depot or big retail, but we want kids thinking in that space. And we called it, during COVID, backyarding. Is tailor that space to your needs. Do you want to be a landscaper? Do you want to exercise outside? I have an outdoor office. Do do you, you know, we have like 14 categories. Are you an entertainer? Do you want to cook? Do you want to tailor that space for your individual family needs? You have kids, you have dogs. And then it becomes valuable. And that's what we want to incentivize. And again, it's curb appeal and everything else, is tailor that outdoor space, because the plants you plant are also habitat, right? And they're likely going to be a food source for insects or birds, et cetera. And that's all come full circle. So again, that started about 12 years ago. And now we're very proud of where the foundation is in that space.
Hats off. Kudos. Keep it going. That's fantastic.
Thank you. No, that's I find that incredible, because, you know, to make that connection to, I mean, there's a difference between curb appeal and understanding the right things to plant, you know, like, and there's a lot of options out there. There's a lot of things that look pretty, you know, but there's responsible things to add to your landscape. And then there's some that aren't so responsible. You know, I think that's amazing that you're going that far deep into making a connection between dogs and then the environment also, you know, to educate kids. And I think that's one of the main things that we need, you know, not only for the future of our, you know, of human beings as a, you know, as a collective, but also just in our industry as well. You know, I always want to, you know, like, how can you figure out ways to, I think it's a very much a thing to, how do we keep this industry going in a good, strong, healthy way, and help to create interest in this industry as well. And that's incredible that you're doing it that in that manner. So I commend you for sure.
It's one size does not fit all, right? So if you want, we saw this, there is a problem. So if you retire from New Jersey and you go to the desert, right? You're out in Palm Springs and you love your lush Kentucky bluegrass yard. Well, it's probably not the space for it, you know, the desert.
Right.
Now there are, you know, if you want to use a buffalo, there are grasses that are tough and may survive, but those are the kinds of things, you know, water is critically important, quality and availability. And so those are the things we want to teach, is depending on where you live, it's very, very different. And that's what Turf Mud also teaches, is in those lesson plans during the great drought in California. You know, we had the West Coast Mission specifically tailored, and we did dog adoptions in California, and we did a lot of yardscapes and makeovers that were tailored to water challenged areas. You can have a yard, you can have a safe place for the kids to play and the dogs to play. In any particular region, including the desert, you can have flowering plants in the desert, or you can have them in where there's too much water. And the country our size is just that. We have them all. Mm-hmm. And that's the key, is to understand what your needs are, what the kids' needs are, the dog's needs are, and we'll help you find it. And Turf Mud will help you find it.
Very cool. Yeah, teaching kids to be stewards of the environment in such a different way. It's very neat. I like it. As far as time, we've had some good, healthy conversation here, Chris. Again, we appreciate you being a part of you know, from the field and joining us today. I kind of want to take this in one different direction, kind of flip the mic and put it in your hands for a second. But, you know, I don't know if you know much about Landscape Hub and what we do as far as being a marketplace, but were there any questions that you might have for us and what we're up to?
Well, you know the business better than I do. And you know the landscape business better than we do here at Equip. What I'd love for you, not necessarily here today, is to let us know your thoughts and ideas and guidance. How can we grow the show, evolve the show, but be relevant? How can we be truly beneficial to a landscape contractor or a hardscaper? What is it we can do at our show, whether it's in training or peer opportunities or demonstration opportunities? Help us continue to be relevant to our attendees. And that's what I'd ask you to do, is at some given time, help us. Again, we partner with landscape management, or we partner with dealer groups, or we partner with irrigation groups to help us better understand our attendee and what changes are in the marketplace and how to stay relevant. And so that's where, you know, your pros in your space, is I would solicit your ongoing guidance and input.
Certainly. Joe has all of that. It's all in his head right now.
Right now. I think something that's, and you've mentioned it before, and actually it's something that we do here at Landscape Hub a lot too. And I think it's a good common core human principle we should all do, but we get caught up in it, is listen. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
What are you looking for? How can we make the show better? You know, I've attended several years, and Will has, I wasn't here this past year.
Yep.
But I mean, the fact that you're reaching out, hey, what more can we bring to the table? That's key, because we are in a changing industry. It's something new pops up every day. You know, some of it's good, some of it's bad. And, you know, how you handle that, handle it collectively is huge. I mean, the fact that you're doing the interviews with attendees, you're taking those surveys, and then you're going back to your board and being like, all right, this is what we're hearing. And that you've got a board that is willing. I mean, that's a main thing right there. You've got a board that is willing to work and change. I mean, look at what, you know, Turf Mutt turned into. I mean, we'll come up with ideas. Will and I are always a good plethora of ideas on the subject matter. Helping people out. So I do want
to tell you this is, you know, we did significant survey work this year, and we know now that we own the show and manage the show, is it has to function better. So getting in and out of the facility, food, timing, places to sit, et cetera. Again, we did sell out. And so we ended up taking a lot of the internal seating out. But we now have, you know, people had no place to sit, and food was too far. So I also, we want to hear that. It's just the physicality of the place, logistics. I asked for and got a new traffic plan. Yeah. And so we're going to do some things differently. We're going to create, you know, better bus drop-off zones and Uber zones and taxi zones and parking and grab and goes and changing. We're bringing in additional vendors in. We have to improve the food experience. We have to improve the coffee. The coffee lines are too long. So
I will say I did tear up some grass parking up on the hill on an angle. I mean, it was perfect how my truck looked. It took a couple pictures, but it wasn't good as I went to pull out onto the road. Left a couple ruts. So and when you're repairing the backside of all the digging of holes, just go over to the main part of the building. There's, you know, a half-ton pickup mark there. Probably a couple three-quarter tons as well. So
We're working on that right now. But again, we have 25,000 people. So the facility's used to that. They can handle that. But you'll see some changes this year. We got to get people in better and out better. So again, we like that input, you know, not just what we're doing right, but what we could improve upon.
Sure.
That's probably one of the it's probably one of the largest shows that you have probably the largest number of pickup trucks in attendance and not small compact.
Oh, yeah.
I'll wager we're number one in pickups.
Yeah. Well, I had one idea, and I could always expound on this and write you guys later. Just to throw it out there is, you know, you're doing some tree climbing, as far as teaching and educating, you know, you have tons of tools and all that that's available for people to demo, but, you know, a thought of maybe you're taking some practical teachings of, you know, hey, how do I take this set of hand, you know, shears or the set of hand tools or whatever? How can I prune things properly? Yeah. I think those techniques are being lost somewhere in translation. And the more and more, you know, I mean, it's obvious labor is a huge issue for our industry, and bringing people to fill seats and just, you know, being able to get out and doing some of the regular, you know, whether it's mowing and, yeah, and just cleaning up afterwards. But I think some of the horticultural practices are being lost in there. And, you know, if there was, you know, a couple of, you know, spots where they take you, maybe take a hedge line. It's something, you know, that you get a group of hedges. I'm sure there's plenty of brands out there that would love to donate shrubs to help teach people the proper pruning techniques. All right. So you've got this really great set of tools. How do I use them properly?
Great idea.
Yeah.
Do you guys?
Yeah. So
the CEU program, your continuing education unit.
Yeah.
Okay. That's been key too. We're starting to see that pop up in a lot more associations and across the different states. They are leaning a lot more into that, which is great. I mean, it draws people. And like Will said, you're kind of keeping I shouldn't say dying breed, but you're keeping what has made our industry great alive. And then, you know, using modern technology to make it that much better.
Some of the input folks did during the changeover, the ownership changeover, we did have some of the input folks, did leave the show, and now they want to come back to the show. And so we're going to make space for them in the CE training business. And so we want to make, I think that they're taking that up, is there'll be some classes in that space. I know states are specific in their particular things, but maybe it's a Kentucky, Indiana thing, or there's a general thing, but we are making some space available for those folks so they can come back and do the CE training in their space. But that's another one, because we are space limited.
Yeah.
That's why we're going to take some additional space, but it means, just means the footprint's bigger. My God.
Like I said, you got to have a good pair of shoes.
You
like
do. You have to have comfortable shoes.
You do.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you again for joining us today. Last to kind of wrap up, you know, we have plenty of contractors and folks that listen to our podcast. Can you tell just our audience how they can dig in, you know, to finding out more information about Equip Expo and maybe just some of the things that are available to them through OPEI? Yep.
The best way to start for Equip is equipexposition.com. It's all on the website. And I want to look, if you're going to come here, plan and do it early. If you want a downtown hotel or a hotel out by the KEC, look, they're the ones that go first. They're the ones that go fast. If you're going to fly in, look, you're not going to get a ticket if you're looking in September, right? Or it's going to be crazy expensive. Do that now. Flying into this city is not expensive at all, but you got to book it now. And so plan, right? It's a multi-day event. You're going to need a place to stay. You may want a car or not. And once you're here, we'll take care of you. We'll, you know, most everywhere we have shuttles available to you. We're fairly centrally located. We'll get you to and from hotels to the venue. We'll keep you fed, that kind of thing. But plan for this show. It is a big show. Too many people just show up and they're like, oh my gosh, where do I start? What's available? Yeah. It's all on the website. What education's available, what sessions are available, what social stuff is available. But best place is equipexposition.com. And if you're an equipment manufacturer, you want to think about membership or the things that OPEI is doing, it's opei.org. Or if you're in the education space and it's curriculum, it's turfmutt.com. And again, we'll again have another Mutt Madness. It'll now be called Mulligan's Mutt Madness. We partner with the Kentucky Humane Society. As you know, we introduced a 5K last year over the Big Four Bridge. It'll be back. And so Mulligan's going to have it and Mutt Madness again this year. Can't miss. But plan. Book your hotel early. Book your plane ticket early. Plan. Get those shoes. Get comfortable shoes.
I second all of that. Yes. So. Yeah, some of the ticket prices, if you were trying to do it last minute, were pretty outrageous. So, you know, I would go ahead and echo you and say, yeah, if you're planning on going to Equip, make sure you plan accordingly.
It's very reasonable right now, almost anywhere in the country and globally, if you're buying airplane tickets today. It's very cheap. Yeah. It's very reasonable. It is not in September. and you're not going to be in the principal hotel properties. You can today. Now, we do open, I think we're 1 week out. Before our hotels block thing opens up. And so in about a week's time, get your hotels.
Yeah, makes sense. And when does registration open for Equip, Chris?
About April 1 is the target. Now, next year, it will start doing that. It's a year-round enterprise. And so when you register, when you come in to get your badge for 2-3 Expo, at that kiosk, you'll be able to register for 2-4. That's something else we've pulled forward. Look, the show's just gotten so big. Again, there's rooms and there are tickets and there are places to park and cars to get. But you just, we want you to get what you want and stay where you want. That means you got to do it sooner.
Yep.
Awesome.
Early bird gets the worm.
Amen. Always. Well, Chris, again, it's been a pleasure to have you, join us today. Thank you again. You know, I'd even mention to Debbie that, you know, once we get closer to registration, it'd be great to have you back
again,
just to give a little bit more information. But you guys had a press release that also came out today, just kind of outlining some things for, what to be expected for 2023. You know, as if you couldn't pack more people into that space, I think you just might this year. So, you know, congratulations on a show well done. It's very obvious you guys really go above and beyond to cater the people that come there, both exhibitors and people that are attending. So, yeah. Thank you again. We appreciate it.
Thank you for saying that. I look forward to seeing you in October.